log cabin.
I don't think I'm going to leave the cabin, actually, if that's all right.
It's hidden deep in rural Denmark.
I've finally found you. I need to get the snow off my boots.
A place to retreat to as the nights draw in.
It's so toasty in here, it's lovely.
And home to my own version of Hugo. Oh, lovely. Join me, Sandy Toksvig, and a log cabin crammed with celebrity guests as we explore Hugo and where to find it.
Jamaican Hugo. Juga. It's called Juga.
I love this. Sandy Toksvig's Hugo, the 6:30 comedy for Wednesday nights here on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Now, Radio 4 has promised the esteemed comedy writer, producer and poet Henry Normal talking about creativity. This is A Normal Imagination.
Thank you very much and welcome. My name's Henry Normal and tonight I'd like to talk to you about imagination, creativity and all that other stuff that requires too much effort. We'll be asking the big questions. What is creativity? What is art for? And is an angry surrealist a man with a fish on his shoulder? I'll be using poetry tonight to illustrate my thoughts. As T.S. Eliot once said, a poet's hope is to be like some valley cheese, local but prized everywhere. As I'm from Nottingham, my poetry has been described as being like Stilton, in that it stinks and it's hard to swallow. And there's some blue bits in it. T.S. Eliot also said famously, immature poets imitate, mature poets steal. So this is my new poem, The Wasteland. That's a joke I can only tell on Radio 4. Here's my first poem that answers some initial questions you might have. It's called Some People. Some people will be wondering if everything in the show tonight will be in rhyme, and have now worked out that it won't. Some people will be wondering if everything in the show tonight will be funny, and have now worked out that it won't. Some people will be wondering if everything in the show tonight will be repetitive. No. Won't. Some people will be wondering if it will be too cerebral. Some people will be wondering what the word cerebral means. Some people have already decided this is not proper poetry. Some people are now feeling pretty smug about their own poetry. Some people here will be wondering whether there's anyone in the audience they can fantasize about having sex with whilst pretending to listen to this so-called poetry. Some people here will be wondering if they should have gone to the toilet before. Some people here will be wondering if they should have gone to the toilet instead. Some people will be wondering if I even know what they're wondering and wonder whether they even know what they're wondering half the time. Some people will be wondering if I'm just wondering about myself and my own wonderings about other people and don't realise those other people have stopped laughing and are just wondering. Some people will be wondering if this is his only poem, or his best poem, or emblematic of his poetry as a whole, or is in fact not a poem at all, as they originally suspected. Some people will be wondering why he suddenly started referring to himself in the third person. And when it's done, some people will be wondering, should we clap? Oh, thank you. Thank you, how totally unexpected. So when did creativity start, you ask? Or when's it going to start, some of you are asking. I think it started with cave paintings. And let's face it, most of these cavemen didn't even have iPad brushes app. They had tablet devices, but they were like stone tablets and just used for bashing each other over the head. A bit more like Twitter. In the county of my birth, Nottinghamshire, we've got the distinction of having the most northerly cave painting in the world, and it's the only one that's been defaced by graffiti. A young kid went into a cave a few years ago, before they knew the age of these finds. He saw a deer, and mistaking it for a goat, drew a little beard, and he marked his name on it. Not something to be proud of, you might think, but it's all creativity, self-expression. And in another 10,000 years, no one will know the difference. The original stuff might have been graffiti for all we know. They'll tell tales of Robin Hood riding a bearded antelope called Wayne. alongside a bearded Maid Marian. Amongst the very first cave paintings in the world were the outlines of hands. These markings appear all over the globe. This is a poem entitled Cueva de la Manos, means cave of hands, and it's after a cave in Argentina. There are hundreds of these paintings of hands in this particular cave in Argentina. Ancient, of course, well before 1986, so none of them's pushing a ball into the back of a net. Cueva de las manos.
Cuevas.
Sorry?
Cuevas.
Cuevas de las manos.
Cuevas.
Cuevas de las manos. Manos. I'm from Nottingham. You're lucky to get English, to be honest with you. Yo, come on, you do it. That'd be funny, wouldn't you? That'd freak him out, damn. Can you imagine that? When he speaks Spanish, he sounds like a woman. Do you know what? I'm just going to call it Cave of Hands. Cave of Hands, there you go. I place my left hand on that most solid. Spread out my fingers to form a stencil. Blow kaolin and manganese through hollow bone to leave a silhouette. Whether we call it art or human nature, on every continent something survives, vulnerable as dust. Over 2,000 generations call, each with a simple statement, as urgent as blood through veins. I am here. I am here. I am here. So I'd like to propose that all art is essentially this. All art is essentially self-portrait, in that it depicts the artist's individual perception of the world and expresses their unique imagination. Although Plato didn't believe in art as a form of creation. Asked in the Republic, will we say of a painter that he makes something? Plato answers, certainly not. He merely imitates, but then all Plato did was write down what Socrates had said. So don't listen to that big copycat. A little bit childish, I know that, but Picasso said, every child is an artist. The problem is how to remain an artist once we grow up. I love Picasso. I have a print of a portrait by him on my wall at home. The eyes seem to follow you around the room, especially the middle one. A child's imagination is unbounded. Its reality is full of possibilities, unbridled by logic or conformity, like the surrealists. The next poem is about that, and it's dedicated to Salvador Dali, who I understand for the last 2 years of his life painted with one foot in the grave and one in a bowl of custard. This is a poem called All Kids Are Born With Long Thin Mustaches. Like most kids, I suppose, I was a natural surrealist. I used to think nothing of playing football for hours in my cowboy outfit. I had no concept of relative scale and no distinct understanding of the comparative relationship between any two objects. My action man would regularly itch lifts, straddle across a 2-inch Matchbox fire engine. Toilet rolls, shoeboxes, elastoplast reels, coat hangers and fairy liquid bottles were all stock, multifaceted components to fit into any imaginary play world. But never, and I always felt this to be one of the major drawbacks to my creativity, the double-sided sticky tape, Blue Peter and Magpie presenters, some I always assumed you'd have lying around. For years, I pictured all middle-class kids having drawers full of the stuff. Large cardboard boxes could change in seconds from racing cars to jet planes or speedboats just by a slight alteration in the accompanying engine noise. Any sheet or tablecloth became a tent which I'd sit in for days and days and days. One of my very favourite games was when the British 8th Army Desert Patrol Airfix soldiers would fight off the alien spaceship, which was always made out of Lego and manned by fuzzy felt farm animals. Thank you. Now, when I talk of perception, I don't just mean the passive receipt of sensory information. Perception is also shaped by a person's learning, memory, expectations and attention. Context is everything, as Donald Trump would say. In an alternative reality where Donald Trump understood the word context and didn't think it was two words. I love the fact that you were ahead of me on that. One of my favourite quotes of all time is, a great quotation will make you famous. Anon. Now, my real favourite in terms of creativity is Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein said, logic will get you from A to B, but imagination will take you anywhere. That's brilliant, that, isn't it? It's true to say that you can have imagination without displaying creativity. Imagination is the ability to form images, ideas, and sensations in the mind. That is, without any immediate input of the senses. Like, say, you were in a sensory deprivation tank, or Peterborough. The concept of the mind's eye first appeared in English in Chaucer's Man of Law's Tale, in his Canterbury Tales, where Chaucer tells us that one of the three men dwelling in the castle was blind and could see only with the eyes of the mind, which is very useful when you listen to Radio 4. He didn't actually say the Radio 4 bit, although that's a great thing about the imagination. If you want, you could picture Chaucer listening to Radio 4 in his new Land Rover Evoque. It could be any car, but I'm picturing in my mind's eye that Land Rover sending me a freebie for mentioning the Land Rover Evoque twice now on radio. To imagine what another person's thinking and feeling is a major step in creativity. Theory of mind, it's called. I remember my mum once taking my sister and me to the dentist when I was around six. We went to have our teeth filled, and we both needed gas. And mum said to us, because she knew we was dreading this, she said, what kind of gas would you like? What flavour? And my sister said, I'll have orange gas. And straight away, I knew what I wanted. I said, fruitcake. Fruitcake gas. And so mum said, right, OK, you can have that. So now I'm skipping to the dentist, thinking about me fruitcake gas. So we went to the dentist and we sat, and they had two chairs and we sat next to each other. And the dentist approached my sister first with the gas, and she soon fell asleep. And then he came over to me, but I could see that he hadn't changed the gas. So I shouted, no, no, I'm not orange. Fruitcake, fruitcake. What the dentist thought, I've got no idea. So mum had lied to us. But when you think about it, that's creativity and imagination. Because we think of art and storytelling as creative, but a simple thing like lying is imagining a different world. And in my mum's case, she was employing empathy. She wanted us to feel better. I'm a big fan of empathy. It's a great way to learn by other people's mistakes. My first part-time job was stacking shelves at Fine Fair. Do you remember Fine Fair? Yeah. Fine Fair, it was like the pound shop without the glamour. The most creative part of my job at Fine Fair was iCrime. I used to swap the price tags on the LPs and buy all the latest albums I wanted, like Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin, for 72p, rather than pay £3.50. Now, I should apologise to anybody listening that paid £3.50 for Acabilk. Also, I remember we had these big slabs of lard, and they were always English lard and American lard. I'd never been out of Nottingham at the time, so I was about 18. And I used to look at these big slabs of lard. I used to think, look at this huge, unhealthy slab of lard that's come all the way from America. I don't need the rest of that joke, do I? I found myself standing next to Gorbachev a few years ago, not in Fine Fair. It was at a media event, although he'd probably like Fine Fair, wouldn't he, Gorbachev? It sort of evoked the nostalgia for Stalinist Russia. And it made me laugh to think, when I was standing next to Gorbachev, that when I was at school, a friend of mine had explained to the teacher that he hadn't handed in his own work because he thought there was going to be a nuclear war with the Russians, and he hadn't wanted to spend his last night on Earth doing his own work. That's always been my favourite lie, that one. I didn't ask Gorbachev his favourite. So what I've learnt is, at its basic level, a writer is someone who writes, a painter is someone who paints, and a conceptual artist is someone who takes a piss. Then hangs it around the walls in jars and calls it Nocturne. Here's a poem called A Tribute to Andy Warhol's Wig. Andy Warhol was no mug, of this it can be said. He pulled the rug from under the arts and wore it on his head. Thank you. Thank you. No, no, no. I realise that's just a ditty. I don't want you to go comparing that to Shakespeare. That's for future generations to agonise over. And now the second and final poem in what I call a stunted trilogy. A quick poem about perception and how it changes with time. Titian a bag. If Titian was painting today, think of the money he'd make by painting his news reclining, eating a Cadbury flake. My favourite artist, I've got to say, is L.S. Lowry, who painted northern landscapes. He did paint a couple of northern portraits, and they're so good that the pies seem to follow you around the room. So, creativity itself is an interesting word. I don't know whether you know this, but you can make 1,000 new words just by rearranging the letters, including some that are longer. I just made that up, of course. That's me being creative, or possibly just lying. I think creativity sometimes comes from looking at the world from a particular angle at a particular moment and from an alignment of circumstances. I did a gig once, and I was on with 5 mime artists. I thought I'd gone deaf. And when I got home, I found I'd been burgled. And what I did was I put these two things together and I wrote this poem. It's called Mime Doesn't Pay. Oh, yes. Last night, I was burgled by a mime artist. He never made a sound. He could have got away with it, but then he tried to steal a piano I haven't got. He pushed and he pulled, he strained and he heaved, but he wouldn't budge. Maybe he thought there was something valuable behind it that wasn't. He tried to float the piano. He blew up a balloon, tied it to the piano, then he couldn't lift the balloon. I found him in the morning trapped inside an imaginary box. I called the police. He started to panic, tried climbing up a fictitious ladder. When the police arrived, they let him out. He made a dash for it, tried running away on the spot. It took the police 4 hours to get him into the car. He kept getting pulled back by an invisible rope. This afternoon, I decided not to press charges. I put an insurance claim in for the piano. It's funny how the brain ties things together, doesn't it? So I have an autistic son, Johnny, who's now 20. His sentences often appear random. He has difficulty with speech, and it's hard to know which words he says are meant and which are just open to my interpretation. So I was listening to BBC Radio 4 in the car the other day. It's a Land Rover, but not the new Evoque. As yet. And Michael Gove was on the radio talking about environmental issues, and I was about to turn him off, as you do. And Johnny announced he thinks he's fantastic, but he's made of plastic. Now, as a parent, I know this phrase is from a song in a children's TV programme called Numberjacks about a character called Spooky Spoon. And I'm guessing it was coincidental, but somehow it seemed too apt. I must apologise, actually. I'm sorry if I've upset any right-wing listeners at this stage. I meant to do it earlier. Occasionally, despite all the challenges my son faces every day, or perhaps because of them, he often surprises us, and our perception of him changes. Sometimes this perception just changes seemingly on its own, from an alignment within yourself. This is a poem called Quintessence. Yesterday was quite ordinary. We went through the usual wake-up routine. Cornflakes, toast, peanut butter, time on the computer, the iPad, washed and dressed, word search. The morning came and went without much conscious thought. Johnny set the table for lunch, filled 3 glasses with water. In the afternoon, we went for a walk in the woods, making something out of nothing. Angela used slow-mo and time-lapse, and we created little films for ourselves. Driving home, we listened to music. Johnny set the table for dinner, filled 3 glasses with water, and we all sat down together. I looked at him, a 20-year-old, with what might pass for designer stubble. 6'3", muscular, a new haircut and suntan. And for no reason, I noticed he was handsome. Hollywood handsome. We were eating together, quietly, like an ordinary family. I can't even remember what food. And there it was, a glimpse, unexpected. This was the man Johnny could have been. Isn't Johnny handsome? I said to Angela, wanting to include her in the moment. It was all I could do to stop myself weeping like a fool. After, when I stacked the dishwasher alone, I broke like death. Unexpected, I hadn't glimpsed the man Johnny could have been. The mourning was for a different loss, one known but not understood till now. For there in this moment was the beauty of the man he was. We should always be open to people creating in different ways. Poets now write poetry straight into their phones. Not me, I find predictive text can be an absolute fuchsia. It's said that each generation recreates the work of the previous, but in their own way. Because I notice that young poets now are reading poems off their phones at events, I've rewritten Joyce Kilmer's famous tree poem, especially for the text generation. It's called After Joyce Kilmer. I think that I shall never see an emoji lovely as a tree. Sad face, WTF. I was very fortunate when I was younger to work with Caroline Ahern and Craig Cash. We wrote a series called The Raw Family together. We sat down in an office and Caroline said, "What does your dad say?" And the first line of the first episode of The Raw Family is, "Who's been phoning Aberdeen?" Because all our dads were careful with money, shall we say. And my dad would say things like, "Are you in this room? Are you in that room?" And I'd say, I'm in this room. And he'd say, "Well, what's the light doing on in that room?" And we basically wrote down lines we'd heard, and people said, "Yes, that's like our family." I remember watching an episode with my dad and Maureen, his second wife. Maureen was in her 70s at the time and slim, she's still slim. And she had a saying, she used to say, "Well, I've still got my schoolgirl figure." And I thought, that's such a great phrase, isn't it? I've still got my schoolgirl figure. So I thought, I'd give that to Sue Johnson. So I'm watching the telly with my dad and Maureen, and Sue Johnson comes on, and she comes in from the kitchen, and she says, "Oh, I've still got my schoolgirl figure." And Maureen turns to my dad, and she says, "So have I, Auntie Frank." When I heard the sad news about Caroline had died of cancer, it was around my 60th birthday. My wife Angela had arranged for us to go to the Italian lakes, and it seemed very odd thinking about death amongst all that beauty. Looking around the mountains in Italy, I know they'd not changed at all, but for me, at that point, my perception had. Understanding the context of our lives is, I believe, what we're looking for in art and poetry. This is a poem I wrote that night. It's called Night Fishing. You can choose to give these mountains any name you want. At this moment, they're yours. To the north, no sign of human habitation. Untamed ridges, muted blue and grey, backlit with a peach haze. To the east, a line of streetlights marks out civilization like a landing strip. To the south, across the plasma screen of the lake surface, beacons appear on the slopes and reflect like the tracks of tears. To the west, the lap of the wake, a moored yacht sways so gently as if to lull a baby to sleep. At the heart, in a small rowboat, a man and his son sit and fish in water from the ice age, silent as a distant star. We are greater than gods tonight. We are life. I do love Italy, and I love the Italian artist Michelangelo. Most ancient cultures lacked the concept of creativity, seeing art as a form of discovery and not creation. So I'd like to read you a poem that I discovered just after I created it. It's a found poem, if you will. I found it on the page just after I'd finished typing it. It's said that David is the perfect man, but as with all works of art and all genius, it does have a flaw. This is called The Genius of Michelangelo. When sculpting the perfect man, the real insight of the job was making David's head too big in proportion to the size of his knob. Thank you. Great art inspires great poetry. It's uncanny, isn't it? People are afraid of art sometimes, embarrassed that they don't understand. People sometimes think they're not interesting enough to be creative. This is nonsense, of course. For some people, it can provide escapism or inspiration. For some people, it can help understanding pain and human imperfection. For some people, it can help balance our world by providing things we lack. For some people, it can help in reappraising the unappreciated, and it can motivate emotion. For some people, this bit is somewhat reminiscent of the poem I did at the beginning of the show. Art often appeals to our better selves, but for some people, at its simplest, it is a tool to send a message. And the message I want to send is similar to Einstein. Imagination can take you anywhere, especially if, like me, you imagine yourself in a metallic blue Land Rover Evoque. It's my contention that all art is in some way communication, and all art is unavoidably expressionist, as all art is an expression from the unique perspective of an individual. I can't tell you exactly why we create. It could be vanity, it could be part of some collective survival instinct, or it could be, as with this programme, to fill an emotional vacuum in the absence of meaning. I believe the reason art is so fascinating is that people perceive the world so differently. Even people in the same room. Now, this is a true story. I was sitting watching the film Titanic on TV with my dad and his second wife, Maureen, about an hour into the film, and the ship was sinking. The bow was high in the air, and Kate Winslet was hanging on for her life, and Leonardo DiCaprio, he was hanging on trying to reach her, and people were falling into the icy seas. There was water gushing everywhere, and women were clutching babies, trying to get into the lifeboats. Men were dressed as women, trying to get into the lifeboats. And the ship was rocking, and the waves all around, and panic. And Maureen turns to me, Dad, and she says, "We're going on a cruise, aren't we, Frank?" We're in the same room, but not the same world. I'd like to end with this poem. It's written for everyone in particular. It's entitled, "The First Spark Has Led to This Blaze." Thank you very much for listening tonight. All stories are universal, all told from a unique point of view. This is the universe at this moment, from this perspective. Whether you want to or not, you represent life. You are what life looks like at this instant, from this vantage, from inside the vast array. The story of life, the story of creation witnessed from the first spark to the disintegration of the very last cell, is one story, our story. Whether you are interested enough to engage or not, or brave enough to contribute further, you are already part of the narrative. At this pulse, from a collusion of all that has gone before, you are life. You are the universe. You are the story.
A Normal Imagination was written and performed by Henry Normal. It was produced by Carl Cooper. It was a BBC Studios production.